on Saturday, December 17th. Set the Controls, a Pink Floyd tribute band, is going to be playing at Canal Street Tavern. They've got quite a few current and former Daytonians in the band, and I caught up with Todd Widener, a good friend of the show, who plays guitar for them early this week, to talk about Set the Controls.
I'm Todd Widener. I play in a band called Set the Controls. We're a tribute to the music of Pink Floyd.
Tell me a little bit about how Set the Controls got started.
It's a long, twisted story. I became involved with the band when it was actually called Eclipse, an earlier incarnation of the band. I was involved in 08, the fall of 08. We've been playing out. And through the various lineup changes over the next couple years, we eventually ended up with a whole new lineup and changed the name of the band to Set the Controls. A couple reasons we changed the name, that because there were new members in the band, and also because there were way too many eclipses out there. You would Google search and it wouldn't even come up for the first three pages. There were so many eclipses. So Set the Controls is a bit more ours, and just seemed like a new chapter, so it was time to rename the band.
And now this is still a band that is made up of members in several different cities, right?
Well, two cities really right now. It's basically, well, me in Dayton, and everybody else lives in Nashville, Tennessee.
Does that make it challenging to do everything?
It can be. I mean, I remember when I first joined the band, before we did rounds of shows out, I would drive down to Nashville. I'd leave at 6:30 on a Sunday morning, get down there about noon. We'd rehearse until about 7, and then I'd drive home. And it was a long day, and it was really, I like to call it, was like Pink Floyd boot camp, because we just immersed ourselves, and but it was good because those few months of work really paid off, and we were able to. We did a good job with the stuff right off the bat. And, anymore, we don't really rehearse so much unless we're trying to add new songs to the repertoire. But you know, a 5.5 hour drive is nothing to me now. I just get in the car, and I don't even get tired until after 6. So driving to Nashville, that's just what needs to be done. So it's what we do. I drive down there, we get in the van, and off we drive somewhere else. So,
in talking about Pink Floyd boot camp and, you know, deciding to be in a Pink Floyd tribute band, do you have to be kind of a mega Pink Floyd fan to decide to join a Pink Floyd tribute band, or how big a fan were you before
you
joined?
Well, my buddy Patrick Himes, who is also originally from Dayton, he joined the band before I did, and he told me about it. He said, I'm signing on with this Pink Floyd tribute band. I said, wow, that sounds like a lot of fun. Let me know if you need another guitar player. Sure enough, that ended up happening. But I was always a fan. I mean, never a rabid fan, really, until I started really getting into the music when I was learning the stuff. I mean, I knew the songs. I knew the vast majority of the songs. But really delving into them and dissecting them, I got a whole new level of appreciation for it.
We kind of talked about this with the David Bowie show, but in terms of getting up there and playing somebody else's music when you're also a singer-songwriter yourself, is it challenging to take other people's work and interpret it and make it your own, especially with a,
kind
with
of,
a bigger
yeah.
band?
Yeah, it is. It's we as a band try to stay true to the sound of the records as much as we possibly can, but we're also all playing in different original projects, and we're all rock and rollers at heart, so a little bit of that energy and attitude kind of comes filtered through. So if you come and see us, we're going to play the stuff as you remember it being on the records for the most part, but maybe a little bit more. The energy level's upped a little bit. It's certainly, you know, louder than the record. We have three guitar players to do all the textures and the layers and everything. That's another thing I kind of took for granted before I really started learning this stuff, is there's a lot going on those records, more than one would expect, until you really started to say, well, we actually need three guitar players to play all these parts. I guess Pink Floyd realized that too at some point, because after, I believe, 1970, from I think 77 on, they started touring with extra musicians. And if you actually go back and listen to an earlier live thing when it's just the four of them, it sounds very stripped down and very sparse. But we use as many musicians as we have to make it sound full and big. We have four people singing, three guitars. We have a girl who plays keyboards and saxophone. So So it's big. We barely fit on the Canal Street stage. But
and this project has taken you all over the place, right?
Yeah, I think we're up to about 20 states now we've played, and most of them multiple times. Mostly in the South due to their location. You know, we're based in Nashville, so it's easier to get to the South than the North. But we started venturing up here as well and trying to play everywhere we possibly can. So.
Have you found a kind of community among the Pink Floyd fans, you know, across the country that are coming out to see you?
Yeah, to some extent, yeah. But, I mean, it really has more to do with just the universal appeal of the music. We play a lot of college towns, and Pink Floyd is a college band, you know. I won't get into the reasons why, but I think everybody knows. It's kind of cool because they're, you know, they haven't released an album since 1994. And most of the people we play to were too young to ever get a chance to see them. I wasn't too young, but for various reasons, the last two tours they did, I wasn't able to see them. So I've never seen them. But it's so cool because it clearly resonates to these kids so much. And they know all the words, and they're up in front of the stage, and their eyes are closed, and they're singing along. It's a really good feeling. And we kind of feel like we're kind of keeping the flame, because these guys, you know, Richard Wright is no longer with us. The rest of the guys don't necessarily get along all that well. So the odds of them actually reforming and doing a tour are long. So we kind of feel like we're going out there and giving a voice to this music that doesn't stand a chance to get played very much live anymore. We do have a lot of college kids. That seems to be the majority of our audience. But we also get the grizzled veterans who saw them 20 times in the 70s. And those are the ones I really like to hear from, because if they like the show, we know we're doing it right, because they remember what the real thing sounded like.
How do you guys choose what Pink Floyd songs you're going to play? You talked about, you know, rehearsing new songs for your repertoire. How do you choose what goes into a show?
Well, there are certain songs that we are almost required to play. We will hear about it if certain songs are not in there. Other than that, we just go for favorites, you know, our personal favorites. We do most of the songs off of Animals, which seems to be a common band favorite and a more obscure. They never had any hit singles off of that album, but a lot of the really hardcore Floyd fans always like Animals, so we make sure to include a lot of that stuff. We play Astronomy Domine, which is the first song off the first album. A little nod to the Sid Barrett era. But, you know, we've got to do the Dark Side stuff because people demand it. We've got to do a lot of the Wall stuff because people demand it. And a lot of the Wish You Were Here stuff. And that's the meat of the set, but we throw in some treats there too. And it's one of the reasons why the show is 3 hours. We can't decide what to pull out, so we just throw it all in.
And is it the same... are you taking the same set out to every city, or are you customizing
the order line? Changes. We like to kind of keep things interesting for ourselves, and if we try not to play the same city, the same order of songs twice. So I make it a point to kind of juggle the set list around before a show. A lot of times we'll do Dark Side and it's in sequence, but a lot of times we'll intersperse them throughout the set and things like that. So yeah, you know, we'll do the full version of Echoes almost every show. Echoes almost feels like a dividing between Act 1 and Act 2 of the show for me. It's usually right in the middle of the set, and it's like the pre-echo stuff and the post-echo stuff. So.
Kind of nice structure.
Yeah, you know, it's a framework. We usually have a couple songs we like to open with, and a couple songs we usually like to end with, but the stuff in the middle we juggle around.
Now, you guys play Dayton fairly regularly.
It'll be,
right?
I believe, our fourth time since 08, yeah, so at least once a year.
And what's that like then, you know, going out and playing, you know, to all these other cities and then coming back and bringing it to your hometown, your musical peers, the people you're playing with?
It's a special show. It always is. You know, four of us are originally from Dayton. Five if you count Steve Barry, our sound engineer. He used to work sound at Canal Street forever. So it's a homecoming, and it feels like one. And, it's always, Dayton always does me proud. They always come out in force, and it's always a lot of fun. There's always a great vibe at the shows. And the two musicians in the band who aren't from Dayton kind of have fallen in love with the town just because of the reception they've seen when we come here. And I know Blair considers herself an honorary Daytonian. She loves it here. Yeah, it's always good to come back. It's one of our favorites.
So describe for me what's it going to be like when you guys play at Canal Street Tavern?
Hopefully crowded. It has been so far, so I'm hoping that will continue. Like I said, it's a stage full. I mean, we barely fit on that stage. We've got a lot of gear, and it's a challenge to get it on there. And we're kind of packed in like sardines on the stage, but the crowd, like I said, the crowd's enthusiasm. It so often playing a show, you know, it's a two-way street energy-wise, and you can be playing a really good show, and if the crowd's more reserved, and they may be into it, but you really need that enthusiasm coming back, because then you turn it around and you send it out again, and it just builds on itself. And those are the ways the Dayton shows tend to be.
And in talking about energy, does that create a different vibe when you're all kind of up there?
Yeah,
packed
yeah.
And really tight. And
yeah, it does. It's like a knife fight. We've played shows on huge, immense stages that are fun in their own way, but it's a little surreal when you look and there's 10 feet between, you know, you and the person next to you. But I personally tend to prefer the Canal Street type shows where I'm in danger of hitting Patrick with the neck of my guitar once or twice or nine times a show. That's what I've grown up doing. I've grown up playing bars, and that's home. That's my home environment, so I know how to behave there.
Well, if people want to keep tabs on where you guys are going, upcoming shows, where can they find you guys online?
Well, we have a Facebook page. Just it's Set the Controls, Recreating the Music of Pink Floyd. Just start searching Set the Controls, and we'll come up. We also have a website, AmericanPinkFloyd.com, and that's got both of them should have tour dates listed on there. We try to keep them as updated as we can. So.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Juliet. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Good evening, Atlanta, Georgia. We are Eclipse from Nashville, Tennessee. Thank you so much for coming out. Thanks for joining the party. It's an excellent chance to text your friends and have them come out and join the party, too.